Hello, promoters. Welcome back to Roll Up. I am your co-host, Sam Fain. I'm joined, of course, by Todd and Mike. And we are thrilled this week to be bringing you less of us and more of Nikita Koloff and Chad Olson. That's right. We're going to do the interview from the Philosphere Games Perennial 2025, conducted by Chad, with Nikita Koloff, the Russian nightmare. Super cool. It was so exciting to be able to have him there. I know I was really thrilled and then unfortunately had to miss it because I was ill. But I know that, Todd, Mike, you guys didn't miss it. Anything you want to say before we roll over there? Mike?
Well, first off, I thought I was giving you the gift, right, of the Nikita interview to follow up on the Magnum one, and then you had to go get sick.
I know.
Okay, so you can't say I never did anything for
you. You're right.
Number one. And number two, I just like to call this episode Kevin Butcher's favorite episode of the Roll Up podcast. So, you know, no, I mean, Nikita's a favorite of a lot of people. Yeah. I think that he's a notable character on everybody's screen. In a like key moment in wrestling history, so I think to be able to have him, to be able to get to know Nikita, I think has been a cool thing, and to be able to get him on at the con for everybody to hear from was also really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Somebody who his trajectory, his career, you know, his path is so interesting, and I feel like one of those guys for completely different reasons, but much like Magnum, never necessarily got to all the places that he probably could have gone,
but for different reasons. I mean,
he chose
for his own personal reasons, as opposed to Magnum, who unfortunately had the accident.
Exactly. Todd, anything you want to say before we swing over to the interview?
Fantastic to have him on there. I know, we were trying to get him timed and everything, and he was great. I know he's like, well, I might have to take it in the car, and he was able to get back home and jump on. He wanted to join us on there. That was,
He was on early. That is not always a given.
No.
A wrestler early? That's awesome.
And luckily, so, you mentioned you got sick then. I got probably something very similar to you the next day, which thankfully didn't hit me on that day. I was out of commission the next day for the better part of, 2 weeks or so after that. So luckily I made it through everything with the perennial. And then by the time I got well and had some international travel there, came back and was able to send out the cards and whatnot. But, luckily I was able to be on there, cause that would have been really bad if you were there and I was not there. I'm not sure what would have happened then.
I don't know how that people would have expected me to do things.
I know exactly. Yeah. Mike doesn't do things on virtual con days now.
Well, luckily it seems like we, everybody has each other's back in one form or another, and I'm glad that Chad Olson had my back and was able to conduct this interview. So without any further ado, we're gonna pass it on over to Chad and Nikita Koloff. Enjoy the interview. We'll be back afterwards for some brief remarks.
Welcome, Nikita. Thank you for joining us today.
It's quite a posse you got there. I didn't realize I was joining such a myriad of men today.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I think you're the one here. Everyone's here to see, and thank you so much for joining us. I'm going to introduce here to Chad Olson, who is going to take the reins here, kind of with the chat here today. So Chad, passing it over to you.
All right. Thank you, sir. It's good to see you again. We're excited to have you today as part of the Philsinger Games Perennial. And before we get into a bunch of fan questions, I just had a few questions I wanted to ask you, sir. So, I have your book here, Nikita, The Tale of the Ring and Redemption. And, I've had the honor of meeting you a couple times in Waterloo at the Hall of Fame there. And, I just want to get a little bit about your background. You did not grow up really a pro wrestling fan, correct? And it's something you kind of more fell into through your friendship with Animal, correct? Could you give us a little bit about your athletic background and how you got into wrestling?
Yep, that'd be pretty accurate. Which, by the way, Chad, you got the outdated version of my book, just so you
Oh.
know. There's a new updated version, both hard copy, and I actually went in the studio last year, took about 25 hours and did my life story in my own voice, because I just wanted people to hear me tell my story. And so that's available on, Audible, Amazon and all the places now as well. I tell people, now you can't get the Audible one signed, but you can get the hard copy, signed if you go on my website. But and I was prompted to update it just because there was more to the story. And so we'll leave that to all those on the call today and anyone else in the future that might watch this. But so yeah, just a little quick backdrop on my story. So no, I was familiar with pro wrestling. Minneapolis, of course, Vern Gagne had the AWA back in the day. He had a pretty he had a lock on Minneapolis at that time, and of course you couldn't help surf through the three or four TV channels that we had in those days, and at some point not see All Star Wrestling, sanctioned by the AWA. Mean Gene Okerlund, one of the predominant voices back then. Guys like the Crusher and Baron von Raschke and Nick Bockwinkel. And so, the funniest part, I think, Chad, is thinking back in those days, there was a job guy, what we know as a jobber. Now they got the fancy word enhancement talent, right? So we got the fancy words. Back in the day, they were jobbers, right? There was a guy that stood out to me. His name was Kenny J. Buster Kenny J. Like the dude never won a match, right? Famous for losing on TV every single time. So anyway, all that to say, so I was familiar with it, but wasn't necessarily interested in it, right? Football was my 12 years old, picked up an Iron Man magazine, which was a bodybuilding magazine, enamored by the guys in the magazine. I remember saying at age 12, one day I'm going to look like one of those guys. Now, for the record, for everybody on the call today, I was not a big kid. I might have been 100 pounds dripping wet with rocks in my pocket, right? Not a big kid. Bought a 110-pound plastic weight set from an old company called Sears and Roebuck. Went to work, fell in love with football right around the same time, and then had a dream and a vision that one day I'd play in the NFL. So that was kind of where it began, age 12. My mom had just moved us out from the projects of Minneapolis, the ghettos of Minneapolis, out to the suburbs called Robbinsdale, which ironically, Vern Gagne graduated from Robbinsdale High School. That would end up being the high school that I, Curt Hennig, Rick Rude, Barry D'Urso, John Nord, Tom Zink, and Brady Boone would all attend and all graduate from. How about that? Ironic.
Yeah, that's quite the roster.
It is quite the roster, right? A winning roster by any account, right? All that to say, condense it down. So I'm on that path of bodybuilding, playing football. Fast forward, and I'm condensing this story for sake of time. Fast forward to my senior year in college. I am being scouted by the NFL. Towards the end of the season, fracture my leg in a game, a setback, which was the second fracture. I'd actually fractured my other leg my freshman year in college. Came back from that, so I knew I could come back. I felt confident I could come back from this one. Training for a pro football tryout when I got a phone call, as you alluded to, Road Warrior Animal, who, by the way, I had recruited out of high school to play college football with me. He would drop out of college, go on to, and next thing I know, he's in pro wrestling. He would eventually call me, and if you want to say, recruit me into pro wrestling. So I'll just stop there, Chad, and I there's a whole lot more to the story, but I'll let you take it from there.
Well, so you mentioned you get this call from Animal. You come, you report to Jim Crockett Promotions, right? And then you have a lot of wrestling training, if that's an okay statement. Yep.
Zero, Chad.
Yep.
Yeah. Not a lot would mean zero training, like none.
I was trying to be polite.
No, it's just part of the story. It's true.
Yeah.
It's a very unique story in that regard.
So, you know, you debut in about June of 1984. Who were some of the people who helped get you acclimated to being in the ring and being out of the ring as a professional wrestler? Who helped you along the way?
That's a great question. And just for your viewers to understand, when we say zero training, what I'm alluding to there is no amateur background and no professional training. None. Zip. Zero. Made sure Jim Crockett knew that when I called him. I had an address and a date of when to be in Charlotte. That was it. Months went by, and I just showed up the day he said to be there. And I think an important part of the story is the day I walked into his office on South Boulevard, the statement I had made years earlier, one day I'm going to look like one of those guys. The day I walked into Jim Crockett's office, I was 285 pounds, 8% body fat, and a 34-inch waist. And he walked in with two guys named Ivan Koloff and Don Carnotto. Said, take a look at your new partner. Nikita Koloff, born in the hallways of Charlotte that day, put me right in the interview set. Anyone, if they know some of the story, I was supposed to be right off the boat, not speak any English. Took my shirt off, stood on the interview set with those guys. When I finished, they said, be in Raleigh, North Carolina tomorrow night. You're going to debut on television, having never been in a ring before. No pressure, guys.
Right.
No pressure. And fortunately, 11 seconds later that night, I had my first win in pro wrestling. And then what happened, Chad, is for the next couple, 3 months, to Don Carnotto and Ivan Koloff's credit, we would drive to a town a couple, 3 hours early. And they would bump and thump all over the ring, teaching me the mechanics of wrestling. I'd sit in their corner every night and watch their world tag team match. And then every night on the drive home, we would talk about old school psychology of wrestling. And that's how I cut my teeth. In that first 12 months, I was fortunate to get in the ring with guys like Dory Funk Jr., Johnny Weaver, who was legendary in the Mid-Atlantic, Wahoo McDaniel, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Rock and Roll Express, Ricky and Robert, Thunderbolt Patterson a few times, Rufus R. Freight Train Jones. So some guys who were really seasoned in the business and in the twilight of their NWA careers that I got to really learn from.
And, you know, you mentioned, you know, all the names you mentioned, I was looking over results for your career. You know, you're in about 3 months, you're wrestling Booker, Dusty Rhodes. And about little over a year later, after you debut in wrestling without any training, you're headlining a stadium show against Ric Flair. I mean, talk about what that was like. You know, even though you were a wrestling fan growing up, that had to be pretty an awe-inspiring experience.
Yeah, even the night I broke in Raleigh, the who's who of wrestling was there. Thinking back now, like King Kong Bundy and Stan Lariat Hansen. And I mean, you know, there were some big name wrestlers there that night. And to your point, 13 months, almost, I think to the day, I'm the headliner against the Nature Boy for the World Heavyweight Championship at the very first ever Great American Bash in front of whatever it was, 25, 30, 35,000 people. Once again, no pressure there, right? And I had become the world tag champ and the world six-man champ. So I guess you might say a pretty meteoric rise in the wrestling business. Now, fortunately, I guess to my credit, Chad, I was a good student and a relatively quick learner. And so I adapted pretty well. And you know, I was athletical, and so that helped, obviously. But from a mindset, you know, I wanted to learn everything I could learn, crash course learn, to be the best of the best of the best, if possible. So that was my goal. Right. And so to, you know, to be in the ring with Rick that night That would be the first of many, 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 many matches. In fact, what I understand from the fans is I had more matches against him than any other wrestler in my career. So it's again, you want to learn from
Sure.
somebody, how about learning from one of the best, right? Ric Flair.
Right. So then, our listeners had Justin submitted a question to me. You know, back then it was very much a kayfabe era, and we were still in the midst of, you know, the Cold War. Do you face any, you know, threats or violence from fans who, you know, maybe were a little too worked up by your antics?
Absolutely. So,
So,
again, my
again,
persona and part of the storyline, which, by the way, who gets credit for a nephew for Ivan Koloff? Don Kernodle and Sergeant Slaughter. Okay, they came up with the whole story, the whole idea of a nephew for Ivan. To put it all in perspective and the timeline, it's 1984. They figured the Russians would boycott the LA Games because America boycotted the games in Moscow in 1980. Well, they did. They boycotted the 84 games. So part of the story was I was supposed to compete in the Olympics. I'm mad because I can't compete. Uncle Ivan's mad, and so he brings in his protege to dominate the wrestling world as a pro instead of waiting 4 more years to compete as an amateur. Okay. And I didn't speak like legit, didn't speak any English anywhere in public at all for 6 months minimum. And it was developing my accent, if you will, to help get the character over once I did start speaking. Little phrases. I saw someone ask about phrases, little phrases. I got a Russian workbook. I actually learned to sign my name in Russian, Nikita Koloff with Russian letters. And in fact, an autograph signing in New Jersey just recently, a guy brought me a poster with my signature in Russian, like from 25, 30 years ago or something. He's like, I need you to recite it,
I need you
And I
to
go, why
say
don't I do it in English this
it.
time? Right. So it's a pretty cool
That's
deal for
cool.
me.
That is cool.
And 6 different times, including the match we just talked about, the Great American Bash. Like, if these guys go and watch the old video clips, you'll see a guy rolling the get in the ring and like kind of waist lock me. He was not part of the story. He was a fan. And then you see the cops will roll in and eventually get him out. They figure out they figured out, I don't think this guy's part of the story. So they get him out and the match continues. That would be the first of 6 times fans attempted to come over the railing, get in the ring, come after me. He's the only guy got his hands on me at that after that because now my antennas are up, right? I'm looking for that. And then Crockett also would tell us that they would get death threats at the office, that the Koloffs showed up in Charleston, they're going to kill us or whatever. And he'd beef up some security, or there'd be some times deputy sheriffs would meet us at the county line and escort us to the building and yada, yada, yada.
So, you know, you're also very famous aside from Ric Flair. I think you're also very connected with Magnum TA. And, you know, I've written down here, and somebody, a couple have asked in a chat about that Best of Seven series that you did with Magnum over the US title. Can you tell us a little about that? Like, where, what a whole idea that came from, and just, you know, how it was laid out and what your experience was like that was.
Number one thing I hear from the fans, best of seven series for the US title against Magnum TA. I mean, in terms of storyline, what could be better? Like, right? The all American, the good looking all American apple pie, hot dog, Magnum TA, right? The guy being groomed to be the next Ric Flair, right? I mean, what could be a better storyline than putting him against the number one most hated heel and bad guy in professional wrestling, right? Nikita Koloff. So it was a built-in storyline, and Terry and I had, looking back, Terry and I had great chemistry, similar styles, and by that meaning very believable. And I'm basing a lot of this on what the fans have told me, very believable work in the ring. In fact, one fan I remember said one time, Like they walked out one night saying, I don't know about any of those other matches, but that match against Nikita and Koloff and Magnum TA was real, man. But that was our goal. Our
Right.
goal was to bring as much believability to the matches that he and I had to where fans would say, man, them guys were like for real, like serious, right? So, great chemistry. Of course, Dusty was the genius behind many of the things we did, whether it was a best of seven, a war games, like there's a litany, a list of things that he did. The best of seven being one of them. To my knowledge, I don't guess there was anything like that had ever been done before. I mean, two out of three falls, but a best of seven for a belt. And then the way we set it up with him being stripped of the title and the signing and then me hitting, just one thing after another just built the whole story. And then even the way we went up, 1-0, 2-0, 3, it looked like it was going to be a clean sweep by the Russians, right? And then he comes back 3-1, 3-2, 3-3. And then building to that seventh and final match that when I walked away with the belt made people so mad. I mean, the heat that I had was at the time unbelievable.
Well, unfortunately, a few months later, Magnum had his horrible car accident, and very soon after that, you joined Dusty Rhodes to honor Magnum. And one of our listeners, Kevin Butcher, asked just what was it like coming out to the ring with Dusty to get in the cage, against, I think it was J.J. Dillon and Tully Blanchard, or one of the, I don't remember exactly. I'm sure somebody will tell me in the chat. But what was, because,
JJ and Ole Anderson
okay.
with
And,
Tully Blanchard on the floor.
okay. So, people have talked about how just deafening that reaction was to see you come out with Dusty. What was that like from your view, and what it was like to hear the cheers of the fans after being so very hated for so long?
Yeah, of course we had, so a couple thoughts on that. I found out later, like somebody at some point had asked Dusty years later, did he know that it would get over like that? Did he? And he said we had no clue. We were hopeful, but we had no clue. I mean, you're turning a Russian guy babyface. You're like, well, man, hope this works. Hope it works. But and we had decided, to keep it as quiet as possible, and tell as few people about it as possible. And so I think we accomplished that. I don't think you could do that today in with the internet and just everything. I just don't think you do that, the way the business has changed and all that. However, and then the way we kind of pantomimed, so people go watch it, they see. The play, Dusty goes out through the curtain first. I delay 10, 10 seconds, 50, whatever, and don't come out immediately because we built it up a mystery partner, right? And then when I do come out, man, the place, music was playing, but the place was kind of a hush. Like people are like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? What the heck? What, right? The horseman by, paying Nikita off, whatever, right? And then, the way I paused, stepping over the barricade, paused in the door of the cage, and until Ole turned to come, and I made a move towards Ole and attacked Ole. And the other part of that, to your point, or really to fill in the question is, and I verified this, I had always heard that Tony Schiavone, now let's face it, Tony Schiavone's He's been involved in some of the biggest matches ever in pro wrestling, right? Ever. I mean, way bigger matches than I've ever been involved in. And somebody asked him one time, what was the biggest pop he had ever heard? And he said, the night Nikita Koloff turned babyface. And I was on a podcast of his doing an interview, and he was asking me about clotheslining David Crockett and different things. I said, Tony, I got to ask you a question. I've always heard this. Is it true? And he said, hands down, 100% to this day, the biggest pop I've ever heard was the night you turned baby in Charlotte, North Carolina. which I take as an incredible compliment, right? Knowing how many
Absolutely.
big matches he's been in. So fast forward. So if I think about that night, Chad, and to see the reaction of the people and how quickly we turned him, like turned them on like a dime, like right, like boom.
Right.
Like they went from, I mean, a month before I'm wrestling in that building and man, they're throwing stuff at me, they're cussing me out, they're this, that, and the other, right? Now all of a sudden there's guys in the stands. I'm looking around. Guys got their shirts off, they're doing the most muscular that I was doing. And then Dusty kind of becomes my cheer, a cheerleader, and he gets them chanting my name for like 10 minutes. It was great. It was crazy. It's to look back now in the moment, Chad, you know, you're caught up in the moment. But to look back on it, I'm like, wow, that what a surreal moment
Right.
to look back on. And so I'm grateful to have been a part of that. And experience that. And really, I look back to them. I'm happy I got to be on both sides of the fence, right?
Right.
And not just be a heel or be a, you know, be a bad guy my whole career.
Right.
So that was a great experience too. Two completely different experiences, but a great experience. But yeah, surreal would be the best word I could come up with to describe that night as people are, you know, for several minutes chanting my name. I'm like, wow, this is a big deal.
Well, you wrestled for a few years as a good guy after that. Took some time off. He came back. He presented the US title to Lex Luger and attacked him. And my brother Corey, who you've met at the Hall of Fame before too, he's not able to be on here today, but that interview you did after that, where you tell the fan in the stands to shut his mouth, that's one of our favorite. We quote that all the time. And and then you eventually became a good guy again, and you retired around 1992 or so. Can you share with us what led your decision to retire?
So if I go back to age 12, watching pro athletes, one thing that always bugged me was guys who I, in my mind, stayed around too long. I'm like, why? I don't get it. Like, why can't these guys like, you know, well, like when I make it to the NFL, right? Because my NFL was my dream, right? I'm like, I'm not going to play for six different teams.
Right.
I'm going to play for one team. And when I'm done, I'm gonna retire on top and walk away. And I kind of have my whole life laid out because I'm like, I'm gonna walk away on top, and I'm gonna go into coaching, have a maybe, I don't know, 25-year coaching career, and then sail off into the sunset and live happily ever after, right? Like, so that's like my 12-year-old mindset.
Right.
I broke into wrestling. I would argue with Don Carnota. I argued with him for about 2 weeks. And I said, Don, I said, I'll be out of active injury wrestling by the time I'm 35. You know, he'd always go, oh, it'll get in your blood. You'll never quit. You'll be like the rest of us. And then, so I just stopped arguing with him. I'm like, okay, all right. I guess we'll see. So my last match, November 92, was against Van Vader, and I got two injuries
Right.
tonight. He injured my neck. We're out on the floor fighting. He injured my neck, and I didn't know till the next day when I went to get my neck checked, I had a hernia. You know, he's 450 pounds, like legit, right? So here I got a hernia from picking him up and had to have hernia surgery, put some fiber mesh in there. That's 6 weeks. And this is right before Thanksgiving. So Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's. I'm rehabilitating my neck. It wasn't career ending for the record, but I'm home over the holidays and I just had a newborn baby. So there's several things that factored in. And in my mind, I'm like, by the time I go back and get ready to turn 34, I already told these guys I'm going to be out of active in-ring wrestling by 35. Well, I'm going to go back for 6 months or 9 months, or I'm like,
Right.
ah, you know what? I'm done. Like no fanfare, no retirement match. I just said, I'm done. Like made an
Right.
executive decision, walked away. And many have coined, for the football fan out there, many have coined me the Barry Sanders of pro wrestling. And that's what honestly, prompted my departure at such a young age, really 33
Right.
technically. That's what prompted my departure. My goal of being out and done by the time I'm 35. Like for me, it was a business, Chad. Like the day I broke in, like I was all business. I was like, Jim Crockett, Dusty, whoever. If the angle made sense to me and I thought it would make money, then I was all about business.
Yeah, you know, when I was looking at results of your career, I was kind of surprised that, like you said, your last match, 92 against Vader. That's it. You didn't come back, you know. You've made appearances, obviously. But you've really, you know, focused on your second career, and that's your ministry, your Kol Hafer for Christ Ministries. So do you want to talk? Tell us a little bit about that. You know, you have your man camp. We've talked about it before in person, but you know, our listeners and viewers would, you know, certainly I think like to know what you've been up to for the past 30 some years.
30 plus years. Yeah. So it's kind of interesting, or you might say ironic in a sense, just like wrestling was not on my radar as a kid or a teenager or those early years. Ministry work was not on my radar either. Like I didn't, everybody's figured out by now, I didn't grow up in Russia, right? I hope, right? Everyone got that one?
Right.
Okay. Just making sure.
Russia by way of Minnesota, right?
Via Minnesota. That's right. Russia via Moscow, Minnesota. Just kidding. There's
Yeah.
no Moscow, Minnesota. But I didn't grow up in church either. But I tell people that doesn't mean because I didn't grow up in church, I didn't know the story. You know, the man Jesus spikes through his hands and feet and a spear through his side. I knew the story, but the story never made the 18-inch trip from my head down to my heart. And so it didn't in any way change my life. We go back to me walking away from the ring in November 92, and now I'm pondering what life holds next for Nikita Koloff. Like, what's next? I'd had some health clubs during that time, but I had already figured out I don't want to do this the rest of my life. I'm not going to be, a gym owner and working people out my whole life. There's got to be more. And I figured out Chad something was missing, but I couldn't put my finger on it, right? And I met a Christian couple through some other businesses I was involved in as I was diversifying my business ventures. And they had invited me to their church a few times. And as I told the church this morning, like I wasn't sure I could get on video today because I was on my way back from preaching this morning at a friend's church. I did a conference, a man up men's conference yesterday, did 6 hours of teaching yesterday. And so I call him up, I call this guy up, and I told the church this morning, I go, 17 October 1993, looking back, was a divine appointment for me. And what I mean by that is I randomly called them up one day and said, hey, I'm gonna be at your church on Sunday. And they're like, great, we'll meet you there. Well, lo and behold, little did I know that that would be the day that I would make a decision and have an aha moment for me personally. What I figured out was missing in my own life. I would tell people, in fact, I wrote this, you got the Ring of Redemption, my other book, Wrestling with Success.
Right.
There's a chapter in there where I talk about being successful but unfulfilled, Chad. And so I looking back, I was successful through a wrestling career, but I was yet fulfilled. That was just not fulfilling for me. And that morning, 17 October 1993, the aha moment was, as an invitation was given, I responded to what's an altar call. I went down front, I got on my knees, and repented and asked the Lord Jesus into my heart. That story on that day made the 18-inch trip. And that encounter that day changed everything for me. Little did I know from that decision that day that I would now have traveled to all 50
All
states,
50 states.
36 different countries, ministered to an audience of one. The largest audience to date is over 73,000 in Jamaica that I, by the way, had Lex Luger with me at that event. Written several books, got a radio show, podcast. I didn't, in a million years, Chad, would I have ever dreamed I'd be doing any of those things. But God, I say, he has a plan. And I went from 12 years old of figuring out my whole life to finding out at 34 years old, he had a plan for my life. And so the last 30 plus years, that's what I've been pursuing, Chad, is his plan for my life that's now led to these man camps that Lex and I do and these conferences and everything else.
Okay. And I, yeah, we have your website pulled up here. We'll share that with folks. You have the Wrestling with Success book. You have the updated edition of the Tale of the Ring and Redemption. So I got to pick up both of those. What do you mind sharing with us? You know, what goes on, you know, at one of your weekend retreats or your man camp, in case anybody's interested in, you know, following you that way?
Yeah. So, well, and they can go up, they can link it, they follow me on social media. And of course, you know, link to the man camp website, and that kind of explains, you'll see some powerful stories there. Lex, I was reunited with Lex in 2006.
Okay.
So after the last time I'd seen him prior to that was actually at the Charlotte Coliseum for a show that WCW was doing in December of 95.
Okay.
So I hadn't seen any of the guys from November 92 till December 95.
Okay.
Right? The Lord's got me on a completely different trajectory now. They're in town. I'm home. It's a night off. I go down and see all the guys. I mean, Hogan was there. Everybody at that point. There's a lot of guys there. Got to see Stinger. Got to see Lex. And I wouldn't see him again until June of 2006. About 11 years later, at a Christian athletes conference in Phoenix, Arizona, and he had just in April of 06, his last stint in jail. The jail chaplain led him to the foot of the cross, led him to the Lord, and that's what reunited us. Fast forward to 2015, I brought him to North Carolina, and he lived with me for about 10 months. And from that time together is what birthed our man up breakfast, a man up dinner, and a man up full conference like I did yesterday. And then eventually all of those things kind of introduce guys to the idea of coming to our camp that we do every spring and fall. So our next one's in April, April 6th to 11th. Guys will see that on the website. And what I tell guys is the other events are appetizers. The camp is the entree, the dessert with the cherry on top. Okay. And meaning it's several, we're together several hours at camp. We're together several days, and it's a deep dive. It's a guys who really want to enhance a relationship with Christ, or just are trying to figure out their way or what their purpose in life is. Or there's a lot of reasons why guys come. In fact, you go on the website, you're going to see some stories there of guys' marriages that have been restored because they came to camp and because of what they learned at camp. They went home and marriages literally were restored that were on the brink of divorce. Relationships between dads and daughters and dads and sons. You'll see some great health stories, because what we talk about at camp is being healthy physically. Mm-hmm. And so Lex and I kind of take our years of expertise, if you will, what it looks like to be healthy physically, mentally, emotionally, and of course, spiritually. And we give guys the tools and we equip guys, Chad, to go back home. And the objective is to be just a better man, just be a better man, a better husband if you're married, a better dad if you have children, and or even better granddads. Our oldest attendee at man camp so far has been 73 years old. We've had a guy with one leg, one arm, one eye. Not the same guy, by the way.
Okay.
All different guys.
I was afraid he was through the ringer.
I know, right? And in fact, this very last one, We had a guy who's been legally blind from birth, 20/200 vision, that was able to participate in everything we did and things he never thought he'd ever be able to do. It was amazing. And so guys from all walks of life will attend. And I'll say this for the guys that are watching this or will watch this, we always want to be a blessing to guys who put the uniform on. So if guys who are in the military or in law enforcement or first responder, guys have been so impacted by the camp. In fact, the four or five words I hear the most at the end of the week is this, Chad. This week was life changing. And so what we do is we offer scholarships. We knock the cost in half for any of those guys who are in uniform or first responders, and or if not any of that, we have scholarships available. If finances is a need, we're not going to let money prevent a guy from coming to camp.
Well, earlier you talked about being successful but unfulfilled, but I think now that what you're doing all has to be very fulfilling in addition to being successful.
Chad, this what I'm doing now in this station of life and what I intend to do for the rest of my life, by far, I can tell you, as much as I am grateful for my wrestling career, football career, and the things I'd achieved in that world, the word that pops in my mind is what I'm doing now has been the most rewarding thing I've ever done.
Sure. Well, I want to have I'm gonna ask you one more question. And in the chat, there's been a couple of stories about people being very scared of you when they were younger. One of our listeners, Grant, said he was in Hawaii when he was about 11, and you and Crusher Khrushchev got on the elevator with him, and he said, "Are you guys professional wrestlers?" And he said, "No." You kind of growled, "No, we're ballet dancers." And he ran off the elevator. So, but when after this year's Hall of Fame, I took you and Arn Anderson and Arn's family to the airport, and I got to just be a fly on the wall while I drove and listen to you and Arn catch up. And I think it's really cool because you were such a fearsome individual. But tell us a little bit about your family. You have, I found out Nikita Koloff is a grandfather, which, blows my mind, So tell us a little
Yeah,
about
me too, Chad. I'm like,
that.
because I know everybody on the call right now is like, he doesn't look old enough to be a grandpa. I love every one of you. Thank you for thinking that. So, in fact, my oldest grandchild in June will be 16. And I remember so I got four girls. So I tell you, I got four girls that I was fortunate to raise, all in a very healthy, very good place. And my oldest, when she had Salem, said, "Well, what are we going to call you?" Because all these little fun names. Now I'm like, I'm old school. They're going to call me Grandpa. That's what they're going to call me, right? None of this G-Paw or Paw-Paw. I am Grandpa. So she turned sweet 16 this coming June. And any day now, speaking of Hawaii, I'll be heading back out there, I think in April. Because any day now, so Taryn is my oldest, Tawny is my second oldest. So Taryn has four children. Tawny, my second oldest, has five, including a set of twins,
Okay. Hey,
all
I got
under the
twins
age
too.
of eight, by the way.
Yeah.
Got her hands full.
Yes.
Kendra, who is, I tell people, suffering for Jesus out in Maui, Hawaii. They just celebrated 10 years in Maui, Hawaii. So that's where I'm heading in April to
Okay.
meet grandchild number 13. So that's their third, but my 13th. And then my youngest daughter, Colby, which, by the way, if any of you like music, she's the singer in the family and the songwriter. She has her own Pandora and all that. Colby Koloff, actually. Has all original songs, mainly original songs, and I'm biased, of course, but she's an absolutely beautiful singer. She did a tour with a guy named Danny Gokey from I think American Idol or something like that, and
Okay.
Dad, I don't think the road life is for me. I think I might just stick to writing songs, you know. But she and her husband adopted their first about 8 months ago, and they'll be adopting their second in May. And so that'll be number 14. So four
Wow.
girls come this summer. I'll have 14 grandkids, a full quiver, man. I am a blessed
Yeah,
man.
I mean, talk about being successful and fulfilled there as well, sir. That's amazing. And I have to give credit to your son-in-law for showing to the house to kick coal off. I think that would be kind of an intimidating situation.
Yeah, my oldest son-in-law, Chad, reminded me recently. Let's see, I was over there for Christmas, and I say there, the others live in the Nashville, Tennessee area. And I forget how it came up, but somehow he goes, you said something to me when I was first dating Taryn that I never forgot. I'm like, okay, I'm trying. I'm rolling down. Like, what did I possibly say to him? You know that he goes, you said these words. He goes, that I never forgot, and I've had to apply to my life numerous times. And I actually learned this from a missionary in Angola, Africa. The first trip I made to Africa. Like, I've made 11 different missionary trips to Africa, and Angola was the very first one to go help build a church. And the missionary. We just talked about this at lunch today. The missionary said, Nikita, no matter what you do in life, history or anything else, always remember this. Blessed are the flexible, for they shall not break. Blessed are the flexible, for they shall not break. And I'm like, man, that's brilliant. And I want to tell you what, every one of us on this call have been or will be or can be in all kinds of stressful situations, right? But guys, if you'll embrace that right there, no matter what situation you're in, just be flexible. Don't be so rigid that you break. Just be flexible. And apparently I said that to him. I don't know what prompted the conversation at the time, or if something happened the night I was there, that he, I guess, saw in me. The ability to remain at, even at my age, flexible for something. I think it was something unexpected happened there at over Christmas. And he said, man, you've exemplified that. You've lived that. While at the same time, I let every one of those son in love and in laws in dating my daughters, just what they meant to me. And that the plan was that they're going to take as good a care or better care of them than I've taken care of them. And they have. I'm blessed with some great son-in-laws.
That's wonderful, sir. So, we've been so honored to have you in the Legends of Wrestling game. We had Ivan already in there, and so we were able to, reunite that tag team and play that against the Roaders. We're so appreciative of your time here today, and very personally, just been appreciative of the support you show the Tragos this Hall of Fame. And the next, we're gonna do an auction to raise money, and I can spoil this. One of the big pieces on the auction is one of your Legends of Wrestling playing cards that you've autographed last summer at the Tragos Says Hall of Fame. So we'll auction that off and give those proceeds to the Hall of Fame. So if people want to come off mute and just give call off some applause and say thank you, that would be really cool.
Hey Chad,
Yes, sir.
let me thank all of you during the inductions. It can be you'll have an amazing, I'm sure Chad will tell you'll have an amazing weekend if you make it. But even in between time, go to the Hall of Fame and check it out. You'll spend a day or two there if you really want to see everything. It's pretty outstanding what Dan Gable and the guys have done in honoring pro wrestling. And then, Chad, I want to do this, and we'll figure out the details on this for that auction or whatever. You auction off, like, you got a copy of the old Ring of Redemption, okay?
Yes, sir.
auction off a copy of the new one, and whoever wins it, you'll let me know. I'll be sure and sign it, and I'll just directly, you get their address and their name, I'll directly mail it to that individual. So that'll be another contribution to the hall and to you and to everything you guys are doing.
Thank you so much, sir. We greatly appreciate it. So,
hey, Chad, could I jump in? Chad?
Yeah. Yep. So, hello, Mr. Koloff, hello, this is Tom Felsinger. He's the game owner.
Oh, nice.
Hi there. I'd like to thank you for not only being part of our game, but for the wise words that you spoke and for the great stories that you told. And I look forward to thanking you in person someday.
I appreciate that. And if you ever want to come to Man Camp, you let Chad know, and we'll make it happen. We'll work out the I'll help to facilitate that and make that happen. And I got a scholarship waiting for you if you decide you want to come. Right?
Oh, thank you. Same with great you, offer. Thank you.
We got a scholarship waiting for you as well, Chad. So that offer's on the table. Now, no pressure. Now the rest is on you guys. Okay. But thank you guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. Koloff.
All right. God bless you guys. Thank you.
Nikita,
Jatoita. Have an amazing rest of your day, guys. Thank you.
I mean, what more can you say, right? Like, to be able to have a legend of wrestling once again at one of our cons, talking and just being so honest and genuine, and of course Chad with great questions, and just I think it's a testament to what we've been able to do over these past 4 or 5 years, and I look forward to being a part of it next time and continuing to be a part of it, because I hate that I've missed a few, but. Yeah, I think that this is, it really plays into the notion that part of what we do, especially with Legends of Wrestling, is make sure that we are kind of being keepers of the history and making sure that these stories continue to be told and that people continue to have the opportunity to interact with or hear from their favorite wrestlers from days gone by. And so I think that this was just super cool and a wonderful way to kind of pay tribute to Nikita Koloff and his career. And again, just really continue the work that Legends of Wrestling as a game line, but also, what we've been able to do with the cons. And it's incredible. It's incredible. Mike?
Well, I think back to 1989 me that picked up this game, right, that a friend of mine from school introduced me to, that somehow I would then be, somehow all these years later, meeting Nikita Koloff, calling him up, asking him to be on a virtual con with a bunch of people, and making that all happen.
Yeah.
And then listening to Nikita Koloff, that's just kind of surreal. When you think about it, but that's the cool thing about this game is that it A, connects people, B, keeps the history of the business alive, and C, it's just fun. So to me, it's a win-win-win.
Absolutely. Todd?
No, I mean, Nikita was great. I mean, so engaging, telling us everything about the career, but I also really enjoyed hearing about what he's doing now in his ministry.
Absolutely.
Now and all the different camps that he does and the positivity he tries to bring to so many of the people. So that was really cool and really inspiring to hear. So yeah, he was fantastic. And also really generous. He had one of the signed books that he had that he donated to the auction as well, which put us over that $2,000 mark. His contribution helped push us over that that mark. Actually, to I mentioned it was interesting. We got to 2140, which was kind of ironic. the Champions of the Galaxy Con.
Yeah, I thought we didn't get to 2140, Todd.
Oh, yeah, I guess maybe, we did.
I thought we only got to 2139. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's a whole different discussion, I guess.
Do you need a dollar? No. So, anyway, No, that is fantastic, and I agree. I think that, you know, he's a helper. He's a good person, and obviously a very, you know, a very good public speaker on top of it all. Yes. So,
but I think Sam, you hit something on the head though. He is a nice guy. Yeah. Like, having met him, like, there's some guys who play the nice guy on the camera, and then when the camera goes off, maybe they are, maybe they aren't.
Right.
He is a genuine person who's trying to make a difference in the world, and I think that's really cool.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So I guess that does it for the second episode back of Roll Up. We didn't do much heavy lifting on this one, but next time, don't you fret, we'll have more to say, and we will be previewing the Road to Galacticon, which we are very much looking forward to doing. So yeah, hit us up with the comments, questions. We are looking forward to interacting more and more with the community as we get back into the swing of things. But in the meantime, take care of yourselves, take care of one another, stay safe out there, and always roll responsibly.